How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. A packed week, as always, here on the program. In fact, this weekend, we always say it's a big weekend for pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, but this weekend in particular, it's one of the biggest weekends of the entire year. It started on Saturday night with the ROHI pay-per-view, Death Before Dishonor 8, which aired at GoFightLive.tv, one of the better pay-per-views of the year, a fantastic show. We'll talk about that here in a little while. That was going head-to-head with the UFC Ultimate Fighter Finale Live on Spike TV. We've got a new Ultimate Fighter, new champion of Season 11. We'll talk about his victory last night and the rest of the show. Tonight, the schedule continues. We've got the WWE Fatal 4-Way Pay-Per-View, the F4W show from WWE. We've got two title matches, actually a women's title 4-Way as well. Some other matches we'll get into as we get going here on the show. We'll do our predictions. And also tonight, World Extreme Cage Fighting. Four big shows this weekend. We're here to talk about all of those, plus all of the news from the past week, including the passing of indie star Trent Acid. We'll talk about the Strikeforce show this past Wednesday, a fifth big show in the last 7 days. The follow-up to the Bryan Danielson story that we talked about on last week's show. We'll talk about WWE NXT, both the angle they did on Raw, the big follow-up this week, and Season 2, which features such superstars as Michael McGillicuddy, Husky Harris, and Percy Watson. An all-star cast on the new season of NXT. We'll talk about the attack on Bret Hart, how that will likely play into today's show. TNA superstar fired. TNA has added new programming. Believe it or not, there are now going to be 4 hours of TNA on Thursday nights. I know that it feels like there's 4 hours of TNA when you watch Impact, so now I guess there will be 8 hours of TNA on Thursday nights. We're going to talk about that, some notes from the tapings. Talk about Raw tomorrow, the guest host that, well, is not to be, as well as the best of the Super Juniors that Mike is going to talk about from Japan. All that and much, much more. So much stuff to talk about. We'll be taking your phone calls and emails as well. You can always send emails throughout the week to wo@wrestlingobserver.com. I'm sorry, that's wol@wrestlingobserver.com. It's in Wrestling Observer Live. wol@wrestlingobserver.com throughout the week. We'll get to them here on this show, and we'll take your phone calls as well. So lots of stuff coming up after the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here to talk pro wrestling and mixed martial arts for the next 2 hours. And as noted in the opening, we have a metric. I don't want to say the term I was thinking of using, but we've got a lot of things to discuss, including last night's Ultimate Fighter finale. After all the weeks and the fight that never was, it came down to Court McGee and Chris McCray in the Ultimate Fighter finale, two guys who had been eliminated during the course of the show, two guys who ended up coming back for the finals. Court McGee outclassed Chris McCray and beat him via rear naked choke. I know there were some people surprised by just how dominant Court McGee was. I was not among them. The two Chris McCray fights, I have already forgotten his opponent during the season off the top of my head, but they had the same fight twice. And the first fight I thought was like the worst fight of the entire season by a wide margin, and one of the worst fights of the last couple of years on that show. And I didn't think the second one was much better. It was two tough guys, and don't get me wrong, Chris McCray is a tough dude. He fought 5 times in 5 weeks, pretty much every single Tuesday for 5 weeks, which is complete insanity. But with that said, he did not come off to me as a polished fighter. He didn't come off to me as a guy who was really all that good. He just was a tough dude that made it to the finals. And Court McGee was technically a significantly better fighter. And he showed it here in the finale and got not only the victory, but he got the best submission bonus as well of $25,000. So way to go, Court McGee.
Yeah, got him with a rear naked choke and tapped him out at 3:41 of the second round. McCray's had many fights. during this whole Ultimate Fighter series than he's had in his entire career. It was just ridiculous. But, yeah, Court McGee just looked bigger, stronger, and just flat out much more dominant, and dragged him down in the first part of the bout, just stayed on top of him with good punches, bided his time, and in the second round did it again, got full mount, and just grinded him up, and that was it. Turned, gave him his back at the rear naked choke, and that was it. And it just bizarre how both of these men were able to make it to the finals through the situation of the season.
You know, one thing that pro wrestling does better than UFC is the follow-up, in the sense that, let's say that Wade Barrett ends up in the Fatal 4-Way somehow tonight, and he wins the WWE title, which a lot of people think is going to happen. I don't know, but it's certainly a possibility. If that happened, obviously tomorrow on Raw, it's going to be a big deal. It's going to be the centerpiece of the show. They're going to tell you what happened. He's going to have a celebration. I remember times in the past where guys won titles, and the next day on Raw, there's like a giant celebration with balloons and confetti, and they really make it a big deal. Not always, but when a guy wins it for the first time and after a long chase, they make it out to be a really, really big deal. And it's too bad that UFC doesn't have a follow-up show on Monday. Or, in fact, they could do this at the July 3rd show with Lesnar and Carwin, but I don't expect them to. The Court McGee story is such a fantastic story. Here was a guy that was addicted to heroin. He was a drug addict. He overdosed. He essentially died. He eventually got himself clean. He's been clean for the past 5 years. He now has a family. He's now training for MMA. But his life at one point almost was not a life anymore. And he showed up. He won this show. He went to the finals. He won the finals. He cut this amazing promo afterwards. I can't even call it a promo because you don't see promos like this that are so much from the heart as you do here very often. But he dedicated the win to everyone who was struggling today, said he loved everybody, thanked his mom, dad, wife, friends, Chuck Liddell. And if they had like a 10-minute video package telling people the story of Court McGee and showing highlights from the season and how he lost, but then he made it back onto the show and he kept going and made it all the way to the finals and then won. I mean, that's how you make a guy like a megastar. And obviously with UFC, it's a little harder because, you know, it's not worked, and so now he has to really fight and be good in the Shark Tank that is UFC. But still, you know, you make a megastar in one night with something like this, and it would be great if they had some sort of follow-up, the Court McGee story, just briefly on the UFC 116 show coming up on July 3rd.
Yeah, and that's the type of thing that, you know, when boxing was successful, they were really able to get stories, you know, like that across to the, you know, the average sports fan, and able to draw in those people that may be on the fence when you're able to get across stories like that. And, yeah, I mean, too bad the UFC doesn't have a chance to do that. But, you know, realistically, they could by just doing, like, drop-in commercials. They replay it on Spike. If, you know, they didn't have a plan to, they could put it back on Spike and put commercials on Spike and, maybe on the WEC show tonight somehow. And do it that way, too, and try to get stories like that out, because I don't know how many people actually pick up their magazine, but, you know, that's the type of story you want to kind of get out there more.
Also on the show, we had a great fight with Matt Hamill and Keith Jardine. I scored it a draw. Thought Keith won the first round. Hamill won the second, 10-8, due to a point deduction after Keith poked him in the eye, and then Keith ended up very, very narrowly winning the third on my card. The judges, however, gave it to Hamill, 29-27, 29-27, and 28-28. So one judge scored it a draw. A slobber knocker, blood everywhere. These guys just worked their ass off, and Jardine unfortunately got the loss in a fight that perhaps he should have won. And so hopefully he does not get cut as a result of this.
Well, and yeah, you could make a case for that, too. I mean, he's lost four straight now, and he's lost like six of his last eight fights, and I mean, he hasn't had a clean, you know, non-split decision win since, God, I think 2006 against when he knocked out Forrest Griffin. But, you know, he did get a bad break in one aspect, and I had Hamill winning the fight 28-27, too, or 29-27. The poke in the eye that he was called for that hurt Dean, because apparently he was an accidental finger poke. He hit him on the eye, but he cut him right underneath of it. I guess apparently because it was a damaging blow and he caused the cut, Herb Dean felt as though he had to take a point away from him, which I don't think he necessarily needed to, because it's not like there was any dirty fighting leading up to that or anything like that. It seemed like something he really probably should have gotten a warning for.
On the undercard, Rich Antonito, who ended up being the only guy on the entire season who did not lose a fight, ended up beating Jamie Yeager. Yeager, of course, the most annoying guy in the house this particular season. He was this season's Chris Lieben. He ended up having a good first round, but then ran out of gas, and Antonito finished him off with a choke. Actually, he was going for a choke, and then he just punched the bejesus out of him and got the victory there. Spencer Fisher, Dennis Seaver, three-round brawl back and forth. Seaver won the decision. I was not blown away with this fight. We'll get your thoughts in a second, Mike. And finally, Chris Lieben and Aaron Simpson. Lieben, just the more experienced fighter, good takedown defense, just pounded out Aaron Simpson and got the victory here via knockout. I believe Lieben got the knockout bonus, and I know that Jardine and Hamill got best fight. So, good night of action. And, Mike, any thoughts on those first three fights?
Jamie Yeager, I mean, it's, you know, after what took place on the show, I mean, it's great that he's got a great look and he's got a big personality, but I wonder how long before it gets really, really tiresome. You know, looked good in the first round, but again, ran out of gas just like he did in his final fight on The Ultimate Fighter, and just basically completely ran out of gas and got swept up. And Antonito, it's because of his broken hand against Escola that gave Court McGee the ability to come back and actually win the tournament. So, yeah, I mean, he didn't lose a fight, and it's kind of bizarre that he didn't lose a fight, yet he ended up losing the whole thing. And the Spencer Fisher-Seaver fight, it was what it was, the decision to Seaver. You know, I had it a unanimous decision for him. And, you know, it's not like the show was bad or anything. It was actually a pretty good show. I was distracted at the time, you know, trying to watch both that and Ring of Honor. And I got to be honest, the Ring of Honor show was keeping my attention a lot more than The Ultimate Fighter, unfortunately.
We're going to talk about Ring of Honor after the break. We're also going to talk about the segment with Brock Lesnar and Shane Carwin that was designed to sell the July 3rd fight, but
it didn't.
No, it really didn't, and I'm not entirely sure why. I have some ideas. We'll talk about that after the break, and much, much more. There's a ton of stuff today. Don't forget, we'll take your phone calls and email questions as well. So stick around. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We're talking about the Ultimate Fighter finale from last night and the face-to-face, I guess, with Brock Lesnar and Shane Carwin, although they were separated by thousands of miles. It was via satellite, but still. The head-to-head battle that they were supposed to have to hype up the July 3rd show that ended up with Brock talking about how excited he was and how he hoped the fight was today, and Shane Carwin very morosely saying that it was going to be a good fight. I could not make heads or tails of this, Mike. What about you?
I seen, you know, people saying, well, Lesnar seemed kind of out of it. I don't think that was the case. I thought he did a...
Lesnar seemed,
you know,
out of it?
Stuff.
Who said that?
Well, I mean, with, as far as being, like, hyped up as, you know, really selling the fight, I mean, he did a good job. It's just that, you know, the guy in return, you know, he wasn't getting anything back. I mean, it just, you know, for a pre-tape like that, they probably, for two guys who aren't, you know, super huge on doing interviews like this anyway, they probably should have taped this, you know, long before tonight and just played a video package instead, kind of hyping everybody up for it. I think that would have served a better purpose, just because it's, you know, Lesnar, you know, with the microphone, when he's jacked up and wants to do it, is good. But I don't think during training this is something that he wants to do. And I think that maybe that's what people, you know, said that was coming out of him a little bit last night. And just, you know, Shane Carwin just didn't give anything in return that, you know, made you want to see the fight and really hype it up. But, you know, you can't force personality out of guys either.
Well, I mean, the weird thing to me is, I realize what people are saying about Brock, but when you look at Brock normally, he was a very jovial man last night. He was overjoyed to be having this fight. And the Carwin thing, you know, to me, I sympathize in the sense that I'll bet he's had a hell of a training camp. I'll bet he's just been beaten up and is just training like a madman for this upcoming battle. And he's probably hungry. He's angry. That's all very understandable to me. I've never trained for a fight, but I've done plenty of training in my life. I've trained for Ironman wrestling matches and various things. And, you know, I don't train to the degree they do, but even what I do, there gets that point where you're really hungry. You're kind of on the verge of overtraining. You're just angry at everything. Everything makes you mad. That's all fine and dandy, but when you're on national television and you only have to do this for 2 minutes, get excited and hype up this fight. Didn't happen last night, and I don't think it turned people off that were already going to buy the show from doing so, but to me, it didn't add a single new buy to this program.
No, it just, you know, I think everybody that would have been watching last night, I mean, everybody that was watching last night would have been the people that were ordering the show anyway. So, yeah, they didn't lose a thing. It just, you know, it was what it was. It just didn't do a whole lot to hype anything up. But, you know, realistically, it's got Brock Lesnar's name, so it really doesn't have to.
Let's talk about the ROH I pay-per-view last night. It was Death Before Dishonor 8, which, unlike Slammiversary 8, was actually the 8th version of this particular show. It was from the Ted Reeve Arena last night, available at GoFightLive.tv. It is replaying tomorrow at GoFightLive.tv. That's the first replay. If you didn't get it, you can head to WrestlingObserver.com. We have links all over the place to order the show. It's $14.95. It is an internet streaming pay-per-view, so there are always going to be some issues. Although, I think the usually, like last time I got the replay as opposed to getting the show live, and the replay worked just fine for me. Live, there were some issues. It cut out here and there. I mean, it was most likely more a problem with my internet service provider because, you know, we got emails from people that said that it only cut out one time for them, and the one time was a system-wide issue where they had to switch servers to another server in California, so that's why it went down for everybody. But other than that, you know, there are people that said it streamed the whole time just fine for me. So it really depends on your provider and such. I mean, there's still a ways to go. I realize it's 2010, but it's another probably 5-10 years before this stuff really works great. But for now, it's fine. And the quality of the show was out of this world.
Oh, God, absolutely it was. And, yeah, I had the same problems early on like a lot of people did. It was glitchy, but it was only, you know, during the first three matches. And after that, that big one that actually got everybody when they changed their servers, mine was perfect after that, which was perfect timing, too, because Tyler Black and in the main event against Davey Richards and the Briscoes against the Kings of Wrestling, just the show was good enough leading up to that point anyway, but those two matches put it over the top. They're arguably both match of the year quality matches, and Tyler Black and Davey Richards right now may actually be the match of the year.
It was awesome. I don't even really know what to say about it, except that Davey Richards did a interview a couple of days prior talking about how he planned to retire at the end of the year, and he wants to, you know, I guess he's now a paramedic. He wants to become a full-time firefighter. He's got a lot of other things he does in his life, and he feels he can easily walk away from pro wrestling. A lot of people read that and presumed, oh, well, you know, obviously Tyler's winning now on Sunday. Others read it and went, oh, I see, so you're winning the belt on Sunday. Well, as it turned out, he didn't win the title. The fans desperately wanted him to win. There were a lot of chants of next world champ. They turned badly on Tyler Black, who was supposed to be a babyface. And Tyler went with it during the match for the most part. They had such a great match that by the end, everybody was into both guys. They chanted match of the year. They chanted thank you both. They chanted ROH. I mean, these guys pulled out all the stops. Tyler beat him clean with a wrist clutch small package driver. And then Davey needed a lot of help getting out of the ring afterwards. He really sold this loss like a king. And he announced that now you are a champion. And Tyler thanked him for everything. And it was a great match. I mean, this is one that you really need to go out of your way to see. Just a fabulous battle here in the main event of the ROH pay-per-view. One of many, actually, on this show. I think that don't know about you, Mike, but that, the Kings of Wrestling Briscoes match, the Daniels Kenny Omega match to a somewhat lesser degree, and same thing, the opener with Kevin Steen and Generico, those were all fabulous matches. Nothing on this show. I think the match that I gave the lowest rating to was the All Night Express Cheech Cloudy match, which wasn't even designed to be a good match anyway. So just a overall fantastic pay-per-view.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for $14.95, it is more than well worth it. I mean, and that's, and the best part is at least they have a lot of guys who have been inserted over the last couple weeks of TV into the title picture. There's Roderick Strong. There's Christopher Daniels. There's still going to be Davey Richards. There's other guys. So you have that going on. The first match of all the lead-up that's been going on, the Steen and Generico match last night, which ended up being the first match on the show, and the way that they did it was a great way to start the show, with Generico just basically busting out there past Cheech and Cloudy, getting in the ring and screaming, "Steen now." Carino tried to hold Steen off, and Steen went in there. He ended up getting the win, but you know, this is only the first match of what's going to be a probably a good long series between them, and that's just, you know, good for the future of the TV of ROH, because that's a feud that, you know, it got the show off to a great, great start.
Yeah, Generico was going for the win when Steen hit him with a wrench and followed up with a fisherman buster for the pin. Awesome match. Aries and Delirious was the backdrop for an angle, as Aries is now the manager of the All Night Express, and ended up with, I guess, who was it that ran in and did the finish? Rhett Titus ran in for the DQ. Sorry, everybody. Rhett Titus ran in, and Delirious did a flip dive onto Kenny King outside, and I guess got his poetic revenge momentarily there. We had a gauntlet match with Eddie Edwards, Tyson Dukes, Daivari, Colt Cabana, Steve Corino, and Roderick Strong. That ended with Roderick Strong. Truth Martini slid into the ring and hit Colt with the book leading to the finish. Early on, it seemed like a lot of sports entertainment style finishes, which I know that some people, they don't like to see too many of them. But what they did was they put all of those on the undercard, and then the final three matches on the show were largely all clean finishes. Chris Daniels beat Kenny Omega clean to set up him getting a shot at Tyler Black's title. Kings of Wrestling beat the Briscoes. Not clean, but clean enough given the finish of the match, which was a put a loaded elbow pad on Chris Hero's foot, and they did the giant swing spot on Jay Briscoe and then drop kicked him in the head as he was going around for the finish. The Briscoes kicked out of every move in the book. They tied Jay to the ring post by his neck, and his brother Mark fought and refused to quit and kicked out of everything. And this, of course, was set up by an angle that I don't even think we've talked about on this show, where the Briscoes' father cut a promo and then got beaten up by the Kings of Wrestling in one of my favorite angles of the year.
Oh, yeah. I remember when we were doing the show and it was brought up, we heard about it at the tapings. It was like, that had to be good. Then to see it last week on TV, it was more than good, and they played it up to the hilt. All four guys at one point were bleeding like pigs, and you know, the Kings of Wrestling even had great new entrance music to come out with, too. And if they're not the tag team of the year so far, I don't know who is, but that looks like it's going to be continuing on, too. And you know, even the Truth Martini book shot and everything, that was kind of goofy. That would save that whole gauntlet match, and actually, it went by, you know, it was a pretty long match. I think it went about 20 minutes, and it actually didn't even seem to be going that long, so I'll give it credit for that. Carino and Cabana really carried that thing, and that's another feud that they have that's going to continue on. It's been really entertaining, too.
I have been a huge fan of Steve Carino. I've been watching the ROH TV now, and it's available on HDNet for those of you that have it on Monday nights, so you can make sure to check that out. But I've really enjoyed Steen and Carino as a dastardly duo. They're great, and especially when Steve Carino came out and he had "Trouble King" written on the back of his tights, I just died. I just love everything about these two guys, and it was great stuff. We have two more shows We still have to talk about everybody. Preview, there's the WEC show, which is coming up tonight. And tomorrow, actually also tonight, we've got the WWE Fatal 4-Way pay-per-view. So we're going to be previewing both of these in just a moment. So check back for that. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And for all the news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, always head to WrestlingObserver.com. Daily news updates. We've got columns, radio shows. If you're not going to order the Fatal 4-Way pay-per-view, we're going to have live running play-by-play on the front page. We did the same thing last night for the ROH pay-per-view. So that's going to be coming up tonight as well. Dave Meltzer and I were up last night reviewing both Ring of Honor and UFC. Got to jump on things last night. Tonight, Dave and I will be up reviewing the WWE and WEC shows. Last week, we had a ton of different guests on. In the last month, a lot of different guys from ROH have been on the show. We've had Chris Hero on the program. We've had Chris Daniels on the program, Tyler Black. Basically, if you enjoy this radio show, we do approximately 15 to 20 brand new radio shows every week on the website. And of course, if you sign up, you not only get full access to all of those new shows, but you get every show we've ever done dating back to 2005. In fact, Brian Danielson did a show a couple of years back, an hour and a half on his entire career. It was a great show, still available in the archives right now. Some of the biggest names in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts are up there as well. Boss Rutten, Bruno Sammartino, Paul Bearer, Lance Storm, the list goes on and on. They're all up there. Ric Flair has been on the program. Tons of different guys, so check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. It's only $10.99. It gets you full access to everything for a full month. If you have a commute, if you go to the gym, if you just want to listen to audio about pro wrestling and MMA, this is the place to go. More audio than you could possibly listen to, probably in years and years, if you sign up. So check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. And we've also got a big announcement coming up as far as our DVD projects are concerned. Our first Wrestling Observer shoot with Abdullah the Butcher is going to be shipping later on this week. You can order it at WrestlingObserverShoots.com. It's a two-hour interview with Abdullah the Butcher. We've got a bunch of extras, including a bunch of matches, such as Abdul the Butcher versus Carlos Colon, Abdul the Butcher versus Bruiser Brody, a War Games involving Abdul the Butcher, Iron Sheik, and others. Vinny V and I do commentary for the DVD, and we've got another big name that has signed on to do a DVD that I know Mike in particular is going to be very excited about. We'll make that announcement soon. But check it out, WrestlingObserverShoots.com. It's a great DVD, so check that out, as well as the website. Back to the news. Let's talk about the Fatal...
Is it Percy Watson?
It's not Percy Watson.
Oh.
It's not okay. Percy Watson. It's a man even badder than Percy Watson.
I know.
We'll talk about it. Fatal 4-Way tonight. There are two Fatal 4-Way matches for the World and WWE titles and a Fatal 4-Way for the Divas title, as well as Kofi Kingston and Drew McIntyre and R-Truth versus The Miz. That's five matches.
People wonder why we forgot about this, like talking about Money in the Bank coming up.
In what sense?
Well, I mean, WWE, not that they forgot about this show, but if this isn't the placeholder of all placeholder shows, I don't know what is. I know it's supposed to be a new concept for them, and it's a new name, and then doing the four-way thing, but man, this does not feel very exciting at all. And that's even with the NXT stuff supposedly, you know, behind it as a backdrop.
You know, it's kind of funny because I'm not as down on this show as some people are. And I think part of it is because, all right, let's be honest. Nobody cares about the WWE Fatal 4-Way, the title match. Nobody cares about the World Championship Fatal 4-Way match. I don't think anyone cares about Kofi and Drew. I don't think anyone cares about Truth and Miz. And I don't think anyone cares about the Divas Championship. Now, despite all that, there's been so much stuff going on in WWE in terms of the NXT angle, the rise of Wade Barrett, some of the questions surrounding Chris Jericho, which we can talk about here in a moment. all of the stuff they're doing on SmackDown with Kane, which really makes no sense, it feels to me like this is going to be probably a pretty newsworthy pay-per-view. And maybe it's just me. I may be the only one in the world. But a lot of times, these pay-per-views where you look at the lineup and you don't care about a lot of the matches and you wonder how anyone could possibly care, you also get the feeling that there's going to be probably some matches on the show that end up being pretty good. It doesn't matter who wins. It doesn't matter if Cena or Batista has the title. But it's going to be a show. It'll be a self-contained show, and we'll move on Raw. I don't feel that here. I feel like something is going to happen involving Kane. It just has to, because he's been the centerpiece of SmackDown for a month now. Probably something happening involving Undertaker, perhaps, if they bring him in. There's probably going to be something happening involving Wade Barrett. There's almost certainly going to be something happening involving Chris Jericho. I can say that. We're probably going to get a new world champion, and there's a good chance it could end up being Rey Mysterio. I mean, I have a feeling that when this show is over, a lot of people are going to be talking. And unfortunately, I don't think a lot of people are going to be buying, but I do think when it's over, a lot of people are going to be talking.
They're lulling us into a false sense of security, and they're going to spring all these things upon us, which I guess Jim Ross has said to look for something big to happen, I guess, on Sunday.
Well, it's kind of hard sometimes because, obviously, let's say that the idea is that Rey Mysterio is going to win the title, and I'm not certain that's going to happen. I have a feeling it's going to happen. They could always change their minds, but you can't say, Rey's winning the title on Sunday. You just can't. They did a tease that the NXT guys are going to confront Bret Hart on the show today and demand contracts. So, you know, something's going to happen, but they can't flat out say that there's going to be a big angle. It may be revealed that Chris Jericho is the mentor of the NXT guys. Obviously, he was Wade Barrett's mentor on NXT, and now Wade Barrett is the centerpiece of the group, so it makes sense. Jericho was not out there during the angle at the end of Raw last week. He wasn't out there during any of the NXT segments. It all makes sense. So you can't really announce that Chris Jericho is going to join the group. It's kind of one of those shows where, when you're WWE and you're making as much money as they're making, it's okay to do this every once in a while. With TNA, you can't afford to do it, but with WWE, you can. Sometimes it's okay to have a show where it's a show that not everybody is going to buy, but you do like a whole bunch of stuff on that show because it trains viewers into thinking that stuff can happen even on a show like Fatal 4-Way. So the next time there's a show that maybe it doesn't look like the most interesting card on paper, maybe I should buy it because a whole bunch of stuff could go down. And Mike, you would be a good person to talk about this. In Japan, they've done this many times where a lot of the big epic matches in the history of Japanese wrestling go 20 to 30 minutes, sometimes even longer. And you watch them, and the crowd is very, very quiet for a long time. And when the guys first start doing their near falls, nobody is really into the match because they know it ain't ending 12 minutes in. It's going to go 25, 30 minutes. That's just what's going to happen. Every now and then, very rarely, at about the 3-minute mark, there's a flash pin that comes out of nowhere. And everyone goes, oh my God! And then the next time they have the big match, all of a sudden those early near falls, they mean more. So it's a weird psychology. It's kind of strange to do it on a show that people pay for, and basically, I don't want to say sacrificing a pay-per-view, but it's a way to train people into thinking that every show conceivably is valuable. So I'll give you a chance to talk about that big tirade.
Well, no, I would just say the alternate to that would be, you know, have a show like that, but then build on these other shows that, you know, because they had too many, I don't want to say throwaway shows, but in a way, look at the lead up to a lot of the shows last year. You know, people weren't buying the shows just because they didn't think they were going to be entertained at all. So, I mean, if they were able to follow up on this, too, I mean, people will get back into buying their pay-per-views again. I mean, I'm not sure how much more it can slip down. I mean, this is likely going to be, well, I don't know how well under 100,000 buys, but, I mean, there's a possibility of that. So how much further can you slip down now? I mean, you really need to, they need to seriously take the show and, you know, really look at it and see how they're going to build off of this. And, you know, it's still, the NXT thing is still up in the air right now. I'm not going to give up on it yet or anything like that quite yet. Just because, if for nothing else, Wade Barrett's mouth is so incredibly good, he's going to be able to carry that unit. And it's really too bad Bryan Danielson's not around as, you know, the one B to that unit. But it's, you know, it's, they really need to build off of this. And obviously, yes, they're still raking in the bucks, but you make a lot of money off of pay-per-view, and the continuing side of pay-per-view, you know, even with the economy and everything else, isn't good. Especially when there's no other options out there. If you're not buying UFC, unless it's a big boxing event, nobody's buying that either. And yes, there's movies and a lot of other options on pay-per-view, but you have to start building that fan base back. You can't just keep relying on international sales.
Yeah, if this drops below 100, I don't know. I think it's going to be right on that border right there. I think there are only like two shows that have dropped below 100 domestically. That would be, Vince would be in a foul mood. Let's just put it that way. Let's talk about the top matches. The WWE Fatal 4-Way is Cena, Orton, Edge, and Sheamus.
Well, Brian, before I do that, let me ask you this. Have they done enough on TV with the NXT angle that would make somebody who hasn't been buying WWE pay-per-views to buy this? Because that would be the only reason you're buying it.
I don't know. Probably not in large numbers, but I think there's a bottom line of people that are going to buy a pay-per-view every single month from WWE, no matter how good or bad the build is. And I don't think this is done enough to make some of those people not buy the show. I think the very bottom of the barrel is like, you know, maybe 105 domestic. And I think you'd really have to actually turn people off to drop below 105. It's possible. Don't get me wrong. It's possible. But I would guess right around the 105 domestic range for this one. But we'll see. I don't see it being much above that. I'll tell you that much. The Fatal 4-Way, Cena, Orton, Edge, and Sheamus. It's weird because on the TV on Monday, Randy Orton, 3 weeks ago, had a door slammed on his shoulder and was badly injured. And this, of course, was coming after the pay-per-view where his arm came out of the socket. Then 2 weeks ago, Edge beat him up and gave him a concerto to the shoulder. And then last week, Orton was 100% healed. So all I can figure is that maybe the original idea was that Randy Orton was going to be so badly injured that he was replaced in the match by Bryan Danielson. But then Danielson got fired, and so all of a sudden Randy Orton was healed again because he wasn't being taken out of the match. The only thing I can figure. But of the four, everybody seems to think that either Cena is going to retain to set up a match with Barrett at some point for the title, or somehow one of these four guys gets taken out. Wade Barrett gets put in. He pins somebody, maybe not even John Cena, wins the title, and then you've got Cena versus Barrett at the next show.
Yeah, I can absolutely see that happening too. And although, you know, the scenario with Danielson, I mean, maybe they were just setting up Orton just to make sure, just in case he wasn't ready to go. Although it was just amazing to see him this week, you know, pounding them out again. Like, you know, absolutely nothing was ever wrong with him. That was kind of amazing. Not as amazing as seeing just everybody stand there while the NXT guys drag Bret Hart around, but still. I would rather see some NXT activity on the other side, but obviously they have the thing going on with Kane, because I think that would be a good way to get the title off of Jack Swagger and not necessarily hurt him real bad by, you know, just having him lose in the four-way. But, you know, it looks like they're just going to keep it on Raw, and that's fine too, because I wouldn't mind seeing Barrett and Cena next month, and it is a good idea because you figure you're going to have to do Orton and Edge.
We're going to head to a break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Short segment here before the top of the hour break. Let's talk about the WWE World Heavyweight Championship match. It's Big Show, CM Punk, Rey Mysterio, and Jack Swagger. The original plan for SummerSlam was Swagger versus Undertaker, although as of last week, the idea was that Kane was going to be the man who attacked Undertaker, and so it'll be Kane versus Undertaker in a casket match at SummerSlam, which means Swagger doesn't necessarily need to be champion. The most likely scenario of all of these, given what has gone down, is perhaps a title win by Rey Mysterio, leading to a mask versus title match at SummerSlam with CM Punk, or maybe mask versus mask and title. A lot of different ways they could do that, but Punk still wearing the mask. Seems like they're building up to something, so that's a possibility there. I don't see them putting it on Big Show. I could see Swagger retaining. I could see Punk getting it, although I don't know if they'd want Punk with a mask as champion right now. Or maybe somehow Kane will end up inserted in this match, and they won't insert anybody into the Raw match, and Kane will win the title. They've been building it up enough on SmackDown that something has to happen, but a lot of different ways they can go. And Mike, what would be your guess?
I would love to see CM Punk with it, although I doubt that's going to happen. For some reason, I can also see Swagger retaining in all this with some sort of mess at the end that's involving Kane. I don't know. I'd like to see CM Punk get it just so he could go into a series of Mysterio where, he can take the title maybe after this and then take the mask and, do something that way, too, to try to continue that going on with something interesting. Because I don't think mask versus title is... I don't know. I would rather see CM Punk with the title and Mysterio take it back off of him.
That would be better if it was Punk with the title and Ray put up his mask for it. But you got to get the mask off Punk somehow, so... Gotta find some way to do it. We're at the top of the hour. We're gonna head to our hourly break. When we come back, we'll talk more about Fatal 4-Way, WEC, your phone calls, emails, and more. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here for the next hour, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We're talking about the Fatal 4-Way pay-per-view. Started out in the last hour. We'll finish it up here. Other major matches on the show. It's Kofi Kingston against Drew McIntyre again for the Intercontinental Championship. I didn't see SmackDown this week, so I have no idea how this match was set up, but I don't ever need to see it again. Drew McIntyre has got go-away heat with me. What are your thoughts on this battle?
Tiffany, I'm still saying, is going to be the bigger star of that duo. I say Drew wins just because, I guess, why not?
Because he's being buried and they're annoyed with him?
Just he'll win the belt and then lose it on SmackDown or something like that. I don't know. I have no interest in the Intercontinental title at all. If it wasn't for Kofi coming out on NXT, I'd probably forget he even had the belt.
Let's actually take a quick call here, then we'll get back to the card. You're on Observer Live. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Kenny in Myrtle Beach.
Kenny, what's up?
I just had a question about Bryan Danielson, and please forgive me if you've already addressed this possibility, but it's been posited that if this is, in fact, a work, that Vince was, in essence, working the front office, as WCW and TNA have repeatedly done. But what about the possibility that the office is actually in on the work? And, how difficult would it be for Vince to just say, look, this is a very important storyline we're doing. If anybody calls, tell them he's been fired as if he has legitimately been fired.
There's zero chance of that not getting out.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for the call. I don't mean to be so curt about it, but literally there's zero chance of that not getting out. It's not a work. We'll talk about it a little bit more after the break, but I do expect Bryan Danielson back at some point. Probably not tonight. He's got a lot of indie dates they've okayed him for, and I can't see them telling him, oh, it's okay, go out and get booked on indies, and then calling him 2 days later and saying, wait, we need you tonight! So I'd give it a couple of months before they talk about bringing him back. We'll talk more about that after the break. Very quickly, 4-Way Divas Championship. We've got Alicia Fox, Maryse, Gail Kim, Eve Torres for the title. I don't really have a prediction here. It's going to be a girls' fatal 4-way. It is probably going to be quick.
I'll just go with Gail Kim winning because the way she looked at the belt on Monday. They didn't tease anything. Usually they'll have some sort of pushing or shoving between two friends, and they didn't do that. So I'll say Gail Kim somehow gets the belt.
We're going to be back
for no reason.
We'll be back to finish the preview in just a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. One more match to run down on the Fatal 4-Way pay-per-view. Actually, you know what? No more matches. We've run down them all. There's only 5 matches on this show at this point, although I've been told, good possibility, a new match will be added to the show. Yeah, that's all I'll say about that. So there could be one more match this afternoon, everybody. We'll probably find out soon. Or it may be an unannounced match on the show. I don't think it's a match that would add a single pay-per-view buy, but it could continue some storylines. So we'll see what ends up happening there. But
well, we didn't say anything, but I'll just say I'm taking The Miz because there's no point in him winning the title this past Monday and then losing it so quickly again to R-Truth. So Miz will win that.
Actually, I've forgotten about that match. I don't know how I missed it, but I'm going to predict... Let me think about this. To me, the reason they did the title change on Monday was to convince people that look at how easily a title can change in a Fatal 4-Way. You must buy the show on Sunday, which would mean that perhaps they'll just put it right back on Truth. You know, I will say that Miz retains because I think there's going to be at least one title change, maybe two on this show, and so you may as well not change every single belt. I don't think the women's title will change. I guess probably Miz will retain as well. So those are your two guys that and gals in this particular case that keep their championships coming out of this show. Let's jump into the mailbag here, and we'll do some news a little bit later on. We'll take some phone calls as well. This person here says, what do you think of this 4-hour TNA block every week when they have been better showing Explosion on another night? Yeah, starting on later on this month, actually I think it's in July, there's going to be the Explosion show at 8 o'clock p.m. There's going to be the TNA, obviously, Impact show from 9 to 11. And then at 11, there will be TNA Reaction. So from 8 to midnight, there's TNA on Thursday nights. Maybe this is, I guess this is probably the big surprise that Dixie was talking about that would change TNA forever. Great. More TV to not watch. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I understand the personality-driven one to be on before the show, or yeah, you know, that's fine, but to have Explosion on that night and make it an all-TNA night, I think, you know, granted I'm old and, you know, when I was younger, wrestling used to come on Saturdays, but I would figure, I mean, it's not like I don't think that Explosion's not exactly the hardest-hitting show in the world, so I don't understand why you'd want to put that show on Saturday or something like that, on, you know, maybe a during the day and then, you know, sometime during the afternoon and then a replay more at night after a movie or something like that where you may get somebody who's, you know, forgotten about TNA or watching it for the first time and may catch it and may get them to go over and watch on Thursday. But I just, to have it all lumped in on Thursday, I think it's just, I don't understand that.
You didn't watch Impact this week?
I did not.
Yeah, I didn't watch either.
I just said watch best of the Super Junior stuff and said, you know what, I think I made the right decision.
Yeah, this Thursday, for whatever reason, this has happened a couple of times where my DVR will say that the show was recording, but then it won't record. And so I missed the show this week, and it's a sad state of affairs that right now I miss Impact, and I'm briefly upset that my cable box sucks, but then I just don't care. And I'm not the only one. I mean, there's this feeling of just malaise with TNA. It's like they're doing some stuff. Some of it's good. Like, I did see the Ric Flair Jay Lethal thing, and I laughed uproariously. But, like, the rest of the show, it's the same old stuff. Same old stuff that makes no sense. Same old guys doing whatever. Rush turns. I mean, seriously, why did they spend all of this time doing this angle with Chelsea, Desmond, Wolf, and Abyss? Chelsea helps Abyss at the pay-per-view, and in the very next show, Abyss turns heel. I mean, why would you do that except you completely changed your mind and decided to go a different direction on a whim? I just, I don't, I don't care anymore.
I saw the Lethal stuff too with Flair, but you know, my thing with that, and it's funny every time it happens, and I guess in a lot of ways I can't complain about that, but realistically for them, what does it do when you're doing it so often?
Yeah.
I mean, they've done it so often, and not only that, I mean, you have the whole thing with why Ric Flair was off TV, which is, and unless this has changed, you know, you keep having him out there, and he's limited on how many dates he can work. So, again, if this, unless it's really that important to have him out there, I mean, I'm sure that thing could have waited. And the Abyss thing is just, well, that's always been beyond me anyway, but I guess we're going to not get Hulk Hogan and Sting, which has gone by the wayside, and instead we get Hulk Hogan and Abyss, which was going to happen anyway, but I guess it's just how this whole thing has gone down. And it's just again, how big of a waste it was for the whole glass-breaking angle and the waste of time with Chelsea and everything else. Just a waste.
Let's head to the phones. You're on Wrestling Observer Live. Who is this and where are you calling from?
It's Ron from Syracuse, New York.
Ron, what's going on?
Not much, first-time caller. I guess I'll stick on topic, which is questions for you guys. So that would be, what do you think the chances are of these Steiners being in the next Hall of Fame class, and it doesn't seem like they've done themselves a lot of favors, especially Scott and the things he's said in the last few years. I was wondering what your thoughts were on that.
That's a good question. Scott is no longer with TNA, so that helps his chances. He's definitely said a lot of things about Triple H in the past, which is going to hurt his chances. You know, I think it's all going to come down to, and it's going to be like this every year. I mean, they want to sell tickets to the Hall of Fame, and they want, I don't want to say they want the Hall of Fame to mean something, because if they did, you know, Bruno Sammartino would be in there, but you know, they don't want it to be something where people don't care at all about the Hall of Fame. You've got to have some names in there every year, and they put, and I talked about this years ago. It was like you're putting in too many big stars every single year, because there's only a finite number of superstars to put in, and at some point you're going to it's going to be slim pickings. So to me, I think if like Goldberg boxed this year. And obviously Sting's going to still be with TNA. I mean, they may be forced to put the Steiners in there. I don't think they're high on the list, but it's possible. What do you think, Mike?
Well, and if they're going to do it, this would be the good year, because they're going to be in Atlanta. And I can't see them doing it. You know, obviously they have a little bit of a regional thing, too, when they try to do it. And it would be a good time for the Steiners to go in, because I'm sure they're going to come out with some sort of DVDs and stuff like that. But you know, it's going to invoke the memory of WCW, but I can't see it happening this time around, just because it's, again, for what you said, it's with what's been talked about from Scott Steiner and everything else. I just don't think they'd be real high on the radar to go in. Although, you know, if they get desperate enough, if too many people say no to them, you know, they could be in. It's just one of those things that's so arbitrary, and you know, whatever Vince is feeling at the time or whatever they think they can get out of inducting someone, that's the way it's going to happen. So it's possible, but I would just tend to doubt it.
Anything else, Ron?
I guess on the Hall of Fame subject, I just wonder about your thoughts on the fact that there's so many dead wrestlers now, that you've got guys like Brian Pillman or Rick Rude who aren't in, and it's like they don't want to bring their name up because they died so young, but you got guys like Coco Beware going in. I just want to say I think that's a travesty, and I was wondering if you had any thoughts on if you think they should include these guys, if maybe they should do a just set of, oh, and by the way, Rick Rude's in, and not have a big speech and a whole rigmarole if you don't want to bring attention to it. I don't know, I just think they have to compensate somehow for letting some of these guys in, and even though they don't want to remind us that they died when they were 40.
Well, I want to thank you very much for the call. The deal with the deceased wrestlers is that there's kind of an unwritten rule. I guess everything in the Hall of Fame is an unwritten rule, but they only want one guy every year who has passed away, particularly if it's a guy who passed away young. They don't want to have like two guys that passed away at 35, because then people start asking questions. So thing with like a Coco Beware is, you know, maybe you don't have enough main eventers. You have your one guy who passed away young, and you've still got slots left open. So it's like, okay, well, you know, what the hell is Coco up to today? He's obviously not doing anything on WrestleMania weekend, so you put him in. But You know, I think eventually those guys will go in. They're just going to need names, but you're not going to see probably more than one per year.
And I would bet, you know, believe it or not, Jim Barnett would actually be inducted this year. I just have a feeling that's going to happen.
That actually might. That's not a bad idea. That very well could happen. They need their old legendary promoter who passed away at a ripe old age. So Jim Barnett would fit that bill. We're going to head to a break. We'll be back in just a moment. More phone calls, emails, and news. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here for the next 40 minutes, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We're here every Sunday for 2 hours from 3 to 5 p.m. Pacific. That would be 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern. You can also listen to the show streaming live every week at WrestlingObserver.com. So if the show is ever preempted, go to WrestlingObserver.com at 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern. Listen to the show live on your computer. Mike, tell us a little bit about the Best of the Super Juniors this year.
Yes, the Best of the Super Juniors for New Japan Pro Wrestling has come to an end. And this is their big junior heavyweight tournament that takes place every year, or junior heavyweight league that takes place every year, and from the past is, you know, featured guys like Eddie Guerrero and Chris Benoit and Dean Malenko and, you know, just a slew of other smaller guys that have either gotten a lot of recognition there or it's actually been one of the high points of their career to work this thing, which Davey Richards left Dragon Gate and left Gabe, and one of the reasons why one would assume, especially now with the news coming out about him, you know, probably leaving at the end of the year, it was probably a pretty big deal for him to go and work in the Best of the Super Juniors. And he started off in a great way by facing Prince Fergal Devitt from Ireland. And that was an incredible matchup. And that started off the show. I think that happened on May 30th. And Devitt ended up winning the whole thing. Now, there were a lot of injuries during this this league. Tiger Mask was injured after the first night. He had hurt his neck and Junior Fujita ended up getting hurt, and there were injuries where they actually had to do some tweaking along the way, but it ended up being with the guy everyone thought would win, which is Devitt coming back from a knee injury. He went ahead and won it, and then yesterday turned around and beat Naomichi Marufuji of NOAH to reclaim the, or actually win his first IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship, and brings that back to New Japan after a pretty good run for Marufuji, and it looks as though the NOAH New Japan storyline will be fading away a little bit, and we could be getting a little bit of IGF Inoki influence into New Japan, as Shinsuke Nakamura on the same show last night defeated Daniel Puter in pretty short order, which is probably going to set up seeing a lot more IGF guys, and which, if one of them happens to be Josh Barnett, that would actually be a pretty cool thing, because for all the problems that Josh Barnett has on the MMA end of things, he really is a pretty good professional wrestler that, for whatever reason, hasn't, you know, really been taken advantage of over there much. So the possibility of Nakamura Barnett is actually pretty good stuff. So big things actually going on, and just good business for New Japan right now. The entire show from top to bottom ended up being received really well yesterday. And the Best of the Super Juniors actually turned out to be really to do a pretty good job, too. And Kenny Omega, also who wrestled last night at Ring of Honor, also had a pretty good showing throughout the entire tournament as well. He was in it as well. So good news out of Japan right now as far as New Japan stability goes.
Let's go back to the phones. You're on Observer Live. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, what's going on, Brian and Mike? This is Alex Goff. I have a question. The next Dream Show, one of the fights announced is Aoki against Kawajiri. Is that a sign of... we got this, the last big thing we got? Is it a sign of desperation is what I'm asking?
I don't think so. I mean, they've been talking about that fight for a while. So, you know, I see desperation as, I hate to compare Dream to TNA, but when they shoot an angle on Sunday and then do a complete 180 on the Monday tapings, that to me is desperation. I mean, they've talked about this fight for a while, and so signing it, I don't see as like a big sign of desperation or anything. Mike?
No, they probably did it too late. You know, it's like, you know, the whole thing with Tomura and Sakuraba. I mean, realistically, because of the way the business is in Japan right now and how everything has turned out, it's, you know, probably, you know, not the best time to do it as far as, you know, grabbing attention. But, you know, it's one of the not the the only fights they have, but it's one of the only big ones they have, and they had to do it sooner or later, so why not now?
And how many more seasons of the Ultimate Fighter is it going to take for, I think a lot of people now are saying that, especially now in the Strikeforce and Bellator, that, you know, the guys that probably should be on the Ultimate Fighter are fighting for those companies. So how long is it going to take for Dana White maybe to offer these guys more money, or what can you really do to fix it?
Well, I mean, you it's not necessarily a matter of offering guys more money if they're under contract. I mean, you know, if the guys are under contract, you can't do a thing until their contract expires. So I think it's just going to be, I don't know, in some ways it may be up to the fighters. I mean, if a guy is fighting in Bellator and he wants to fight in the UFC, I mean, he may have to just let his Bellator contract expire and tell Dana that he's willing to do Ultimate Fighter to make his way into the promotion. It's a problem that it's actually funny. I was talking about this like 3 seasons ago, and people got so angry at me that I had the temerity to say that these guys coming up in Ultimate Fighter really weren't all that good. And now here it is 3 seasons later, and it's patently obvious that it's been like this for a while. This is not even really, you know, shocking analysis here. I mean, the first season of Ultimate Fighter, you had all of the best non-UFC guys. And then the second season, you got some more of the best non-UFC guys. And now here it is. We're going into, like, season 12, okay? Everybody has already been on this show, or they're in Strikeforce, or they're in Bellator. I mean, we're scraping the bottom of the barrel here. You know, there are going to be some guys here and there that they just happen to not be under contract with anybody when it comes time to try out. There's going to be a couple of great undiscovered talents here and there. But in general, we're to the point now where we're scraping the bottom of the barrel, and I don't see anything that's going to immediately remedy that problem.
No, I just think there's other shows you can do, too. I'm not a huge fan of the show anyway, so if it were to go away, I mean, it wouldn't hurt my feelings. Although, I mean, realistically, you can continue on with that show for a while before ratings drop bad enough, you know, even if you're not getting the top talent on there, just because there's always going to want to be guys that they're not going to go to Strikeforce. They want to train in UFC right away, so they will, you know, jump on that show. And, I mean, it's good for the UFC because it is programming that people do want to watch and do get into. And even though it's not the most exciting thing in the world, it does, you know, create guys, and it gets guys going that they have locked up. So I don't see it being that big of a deal, or the show being, you know, all that awful or anything like that. For me, I'd rather they have them tweak it and just have new concepts of shows. And maybe if they're going to do the Ultimate Fighter, only do it once a year. You know, have it set for a certain time once a year, and that's it, instead of doing multiple seasons of it, and then really concentrate on that and have more, you know, personality pieces and more, you know, realistically on Fight 2, I still would like to see them somehow incorporate WEC into this a little bit more, too, even though I know that there's issues between Versus and Spike. I mean, there's just other shows and other concepts that I think they can do that are fresher than just doing what they're doing now.
And, you know, maybe one of the things that's going to help is when they go international, because obviously the great undiscovered talent in the U.S. is probably somewhere right now, whether it be Strikeforce, Bellator, UFC, or wherever the case might be. But, you know, maybe there are some really, really good guys in the Middle East that, because they're way the hell out in the Middle East, Strikeforce and Bellator are unaware of them, or they've never had the opportunity to travel out here and work shows in the U.S. where they might be seen. You know, same thing in other European countries or wherever the case might be. So that might be the opening to some new great talent coming in the UFC.
Oh, yeah, and think about that. I mean, granted, they couldn't use Boss, but if they had, you know, something going on in Holland where, you know, where they could do something like that, or there's a lot of other things I think they can do and kind of mix it up a little bit, because just the, obviously there's going to be a bad guy in every episode, there's going to be dudes doing drunk things, they're going to get in fights with each other, you know, are you really watching it for that, or are you watching it for the coaches that are going at each other? I mean, and that's the other thing, too, I'll really save it for like a GSP Koscheck thing, where it's just such a natural fight that you have leading up to it that, you know, I would rather see that, too, and maybe just, again, do it once a year and be really careful about it. And their other personality piece stuff and the lead-ups to the fights are just so good that I think if they just keep doing more of that, I mean, I think that just gets the word out there and does a better job than anything.
Back to the phones. You're on Wrestling. You are not on Wrestling Observer Live. Let's go back to the email questions here. This person said, oh, by the way, how is the status of Tiger Mask in his neck?
Still no word right now. It's not actually, you know, I guess, you know, too tragically bad or anything like that. I'm not sure exactly what state it's in, but it's not any worse than what it was. So I'm still not 100% sure.
All right, let's try these phones again, see if this person doesn't hang up. You're on Wrestling Observer Live. Who is this and where are you calling from? You're on the air. Going once. Going twice. And a failure. Wow, I wonder if it's the same guy calling repeatedly and getting cold feet every time. It's very intimidating here being on Wrestling Observer Live, apparently. Let's talk a little bit about Bryan Danielson. We talked about it last week. It is most certainly a legitimate firing. He is gone from WWE. He's taking indie dates. Feeling is that most likely at some point down the road, he'll be rehired by WWE. But really, there's nothing to add that we didn't talk about last week. It's just still a very, very strange situation. Apparently, the belief is it was someone in NBC that made the call that this tie choking of Justin Roberts was just too extreme for WWE PG television. It was not somebody in Linda McMahon's campaign or anything like that. It was not somebody from Mattel. Latest we heard, somebody from NBC made the call.
The thought of USA doing it made absolutely no sense to me whatsoever, but I could see, I don't know how it works with trying to get PG tags. And I know in this past week's Sports Business Journal, that they had a big write-up over WWE's big push to BGTV, and they offset that with TNA going into a harder edge. But so I'm not sure how that affects anything as far as getting that rating and what you're supposed to do in the confines of that rating. But that could make as much sense as anything else, and just still continues to be an amazing situation that no matter how it turns out is going to be far more noticeable and remembered than probably the NXT angle.
We're going to talk some more news after the break. We'll take some more of your email questions and phone calls, and we'll talk a little bit more news. There's still stuff to talk about here on the show. We got 20 more minutes, so make sure you stick around for that. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live, available every Sunday here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And for all the latest news and information every single day, head to WrestlingObserver.com. Daily news updates, everything going on in the world of pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We've got radio shows. If you've got a commute, if you've got an iPod, if you've basically any place you go, the gym, you love to listen to audio, WrestlingObserver.com is a place to go. 10 to 15 to 20 brand new radio shows, just like the one you're listening to right now, every single week posted on the website. It's $10.99 per month for a subscription. And if you sign up, you not only get all of the brand new shows, new interviews, but you also get all of the archived shows we've done dating back to 2005. 5 years of audio. There are thousands and thousands and thousands of shows you can head back and listen to at your leisure. WrestlingObserver.com is the place to go. And as noted, WrestlingObserverShoots.com, our new DVD series. Check it out. The first one with Abdullah the Butcher ships later on this week, so check that out as well. WrestlingObserverShoots.com. Let's go back to the phones. You're on Observer Live. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, guys. It's Zombie from NorCal.
What's happening?
Hey, brother. Just a quick question. As far as the fallout from last night's UFC show, any major injuries reported?
Not that I know of. I didn't really check around this morning, but I didn't hear anything. Nobody was hurt bad tonight, or last night at UFC. Nobody was hurt bad at ROH, so a good night overall.
Good. And just one quick question. When are we going to see Jamie Yeager fighting in the next K1 Max tournament?
I don't know. Are you looking forward to this?
He has zero ground skills. He just has, you know, those wacky kicks, and I think he'd get over with K1.
Well, I guess that's possible, but theoretically you'd want to learn some ground skills would be my argument there.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. He absolutely would be a good fit, but I cannot see the UFC wanting to let him go until they just see a little bit more out of him first. Because, again, you know, in those first rounds, and I mean, you know, some of the knockouts he had in his prelim fight and everything else, I mean, again, it's a lot like Pat Barry where, you know, all right, in the first round, he's going to be dangerous. It's just working on his ground skills and his wind after that.
The ROH pay-per-view last night did more buys than the first and second show, so it was an improvement, and they've got the replay starting Monday, and I think that they will probably do pretty well on the replay since word of mouth was so strong. So, positive sign there for ROH. Don't have a lot of details other than that, but more buys for this show than the previous two shows, so they are growing, which is the opposite, actually, of TNA of late. It's like a constant stream of TNA sadness on this particular program, but I just report the news, everybody. That's pretty much
all I can do. Just look how sad it was to see the reports leading into the show that where you have the Freebird scenario with Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, and Eric Young, and they go ahead and strip the titles off and don't really say anything about it. And with the Abyss thing, it's, you know, if they don't particularly know what they're doing or seem like they know what they're doing, how can anybody else have any interest in it whatsoever? At least on the ROH flip side, I mean, they gave you a reason over the last couple of weeks of TV to watch the show, and they've been able to get good word of mouth. And they have those really kick-ass old-school posters, too, which, you know, being an old man, I love those things leading up to a show.
That's right, Mike. I'm going to give you a minute to come up with a good trivia question. We're going to give away one of those ROH posters here in just a moment on the program. And also tell you how you can order them if you'd like to. The individual involved in putting the posters together, who actually is not an ROH employee. ROH is hiring this guy to do the posters. They have an awesome poster for the Death Before Dishonor 8 pay-per-view. It's an old-school style poster, and they're available at a website here we'll plug in just a moment. We're going to give one away here on the program in the next 10 minutes, so stick around for that. I wanted to mention very quickly about that TNA angle. Just one of the normal things that annoys me about the show. The tag team champions were, in fact, Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, and Eric Young. The gimmick was that any two of the three could defend the titles. Scott Hall gets fired. That leaves Kevin Nash and Eric Young. So instead of just having those two guys defend the titles, they stripped them of the titles, they announced a tournament, and then who wrestled in the first match of the tournament but Kevin Nash and Eric Young? What? Can you please explain this to me?
Can't. And the worst part is, they can't either.
No, I don't know what's going on. I never do, but what the hell? Do you have a good trivia question for the ROH pay-per-view poster?
Yeah, I might as well try to tie that in. I won't make it too hard either. Tyler Black, the ROH World Heavyweight Champion, won one of his first, I guess we want to say, indie major titles. He was the FIP champion. And the man he defeated also lost in his attempt to win the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship from Togi Makabe yesterday. Who is that person that Tyler Black defeated for the FIP title?
If you know the answer to the question, send it to rohcomp@suplexmedia.com. That's rohcomp, R-O-H-C-O-M-P, at suplexmedia.com, rohcomp at suplexmedia.com. And if you don't win, you can head to their store, which is at thesuplex.com/store.php, or just thesuplex.com will take you there. It's an ROH retro style poster for the Death Before Dishonor 8 show. They're really awesome. Head to thesuplex.com and check out the poster. You can purchase it there, or if you think you know the answer to the trivia question Mike just asked, we'll ask it again here in just a second. You can send that to rohcomp@suplexmedia.com. Let's head back to the phones. You're on Observer Radio. Who is this and where are you calling from? You're on the air. I don't know what's up with people today. Cowards calling into the show is what's going on. Let's go back to the email questions and such. Actually, we should talk about some news very quickly before we wrap it up. Trent Acid, indie star, passed away this week after a long battle with various demons, including drug addiction. And you're out there on the East Coast, Mike. Did you see a lot of Trent Acid? I'm out here in Seattle, an island, so to speak, and didn't really get to see a lot of them.
No, because I really wasn't that, you know, I didn't really watch Ring of Honor when they first started popping off. He's with the Backstreet Boys or the Backseat Boys, and he did a lot of work with CZW, which isn't exactly the type of promotion that I would frequent. So I didn't get really a chance to see him a lot, but I did always hear his name almost, I don't want to say tragic, well, yeah, I guess tragically, in that whenever anybody would talk about him and they would talk about CZW, even if they didn't like the style, they would always say about how that guy could have been a lot bigger of a star if he could have kept his demons in check. And I guess he had issues with, I guess, heroin. I'm not 100% sure of what it was, and was in and out of jail. And he just could not get his stuff together enough to be a successful professional wrestler. But he was somebody that almost universally, even if he didn't like, you know, the style he wrestled or the promotions he was working for, was someone that stood out as that people would talk about deserving better if he could just get his stuff together. And it's just a really sad situation.
Yeah, it was. I mean, this should tell you something about, I mean, he was a very talented guy, but his drug issues were so bad that from talking to different people that had known him throughout his life, I guess the deal was that if you asked people why Trent Acid didn't make it, you almost never heard anyone say it's because he's too small, and he was a smaller guy, but they never pointed it out as being that he was too small or anything else. It was always, he's got this problem with drugs. And, you know, small guys, it's tough for them to make it. And that was never like the first thing that people said as to why he didn't make it. It was always the drugs. He had the problem forever. And eventually, in the end, it caught up with him, and I believe 29 years old. But very sad story, as always. So that is the story of Trent Acid. There's a lot more online. You can Google it and find out more. But that is the story there. NXT this past Tuesday night. Thoughts on, I guess, week two of Percy Watson?
I see he's going to re-accessorize every week with a new color. He went from red to purple specs and purple tights. I guess he's officially Showtime Percy Watson as well, too. He's got a new first name. It is Showtime. But
I wonder if WWE is even aware that there's a Showtime Eric Young. Probably not, actually.
I wouldn't think so. But Alex Riley, I thought the Riley Cavall match was pretty good, and I always made fun of Loki for his interview style, but I'll say this. I mean, all the packages that they've had, even the Eli Cottonwood one this week, have been really, really good. The Alex Riley one last week I thought was hilarious and has been the best thing on the show so far. But Loki or Cavall's, the package they had for him was just absolutely excellent, and I thought really did a good job. And then, obviously, he's out there with Laycool. But I didn't think that match was too bad at all, and I didn't think the McGillicuddy Lucky Cannon teaming up with Henry and Kofi was too bad either. It's just, you know, obviously Mark Henry's there, but that whole thing ended up leading into, you know, Matt Stryker running up to Cody Rhodes as Cody had some negative things to say about Lucky Cannon after the match, and Mark Henry challenged Cody for him. Stryker ran up to get Cody's response, and he kind of forearm shivered him in the side of the neck and knocked him off the stage. And, you know, if he would have sold the front of his head, because the way the camera shot was, if he would have sold that, you know, he was knocked out on the concrete, it would have been a lot better. And so we got some really bad acting for, it wasn't Matt Stryker's fault. I don't think he knew that the camera caught how kind of poor that forearm shiver really was. It wasn't as devastating as was being sold.
Well, it's the rookie show. What more can I even say?
Matt Stryker and Cody Rhodes shouldn't be rookies.
Well,
either should the cameraman, but then again, on Raw, you know, a TNA-styled mistake for WWE this week with Mark Henry, and I'm sure everybody thought of Mark Henry actually being ahead of the NXT guy, so not a good week for the cameraman.
I still like my theory that Wade Barrett was in front of him, and he ran so fast that he went all the way around the earth and caught up with Mark Henry as he came around.
So it's like you'd be in an Atari 2600 game or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. It was like Pac-Man. You go off the screen on one side, and you come in the screen on the other side. Yeah, I know my video games, everybody. Let's talk a little bit about the WEC show tonight. It is a B show, so to speak, as Jamie Varner is in the main event against Kamal Chaloris. Mark Hominick is in the semi-main. Chris Hordeski is on the show, coming off his goofball knockout where he turned his back on his opponent several months ago. And what are your thoughts on this show?
You know, it's so much stuff happens. I'm not sure if somebody that maybe we saw the WEC pay-per-view for the first time and then saw the prelims. Hopefully they were able to keep some of those people who saw that, because this has been the first thing they've had after it. I mean, to be honest, I kind of forgot about it because there's so much stuff going on. So hopefully nobody else did, because no matter what, the WEC shows, until otherwise noted, are always worth watching up and down the show. Chaloris and Varner, I think this is kind of a real big step up for Chaloris. I mean, he Will Kerr a couple fights ago last November. I mean, Kerr was kind of set right up for him, as Chaloris didn't bother to drop down and use his wrestling skills at all, and just went out and pounded him away. He had a little bit of a tougher fight against Dave Jansen, but he's taken a huge step up here in competition against Varner, who wants to get back on a good streak after he lost to Ben Henderson. And you know, he was injured before that for almost a year from the time he'd actually beaten Donald Cerrone for the title. So, again, huge step up for Chaloris, and I think Varner's just going to be way, way too much for him, even with Chaloris' wrestling game. The other fight on the show that I'm actually looking forward to a little bit is the Grisby-Davis fight. Grisby's won 9 fights. He's won all 3 of his WEC fights within the first round. He buried Jens Pulver his last time out, and you know, he's only 21 years old. He's already beaten Hominick, who's got the semi-main event spot.
Actually,
on this
Mike,
show,
hold on a second. So I hate to cut you off, but we have to head to a break right now. We'll finish this preview when we get back. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here for the final segment on the show. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Mike, you were finishing up the preview of the WEC show.
Yeah, I was going to say, the Grisby-Davis fight, I'm actually looking forward to that, too. So, again, you know, the WEC shows, even though there's not a whole lot of, you know, huge name value or anything like that, it's pretty much guaranteed to be up and down the card a pretty good show. And you know, maybe you can sit there and watch that, and then just check WrestlingObserver.com for the rundown of the Fatal 4-Way pay-per-view that will be taking place tonight.
That's right. Immediately after this program goes off the air, head to WrestlingObserver.com. Dave Meltzer is going to be doing live running play-by-play of the Fatal 4-Way pay-per-view. There's a Fatal 4-Way match for the Raw title, Fatal 4-Way match for the World title, a women's Fatal 4-Way, plus 2 singles matches on the show, and perhaps one more to be added. Probably some big angles going down as well. Jim Ross has hinted big news on tonight's show, so we'll cover all of that at WrestlingObserver.com. And then later on tonight, Dave Meltzer and I are going to be back. Brand new episode of Wrestling Observer Radio, available only for subscribers at WrestlingObserver.com. So sign up and check that out. Of course, we're here every single week on Sports Byline USA at 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern. And as always, if the show happens to be preempted in your area, you can always head to WrestlingObserver.com. There's a link on the front page. You can listen to the show live streaming on your computer for free. So check that out if, for whatever reason, the show is preempted. It's a big week coming up. Tomorrow night is Raw. We're going to have the follow-up to the Fatal 4-Way pay-per-view and find out whether or not Bret Hart gives the NXT rookies contracts. It's a big show tomorrow, and Richard Blumenthal, who is opposing Linda McMahon in a run for Senate, he's got dudes at the show checking it out, looking for dirt. That's tomorrow night, so probably expect
one of them is not Brian Danielson.
That's right. Probably expect a pretty tame show. And, of course, next week we'll talk more about that. We'll talk more about Brian Danielson and all the news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. That's it from here. Thanks, everybody, for listening, of course. Thanks, Mike, as always. We'll talk to you again next week. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network.